Okay, I'm going to call to order this meeting of the Senate Committee on Workforce. It's June 1st, 2015. This is most likely the beginning of our last week of work as a policy committee for this session, which isn't to say we're not going to be busy beavers during the interim, but...
Much better a busy beaver than a busy duck.
The bulk of today's time is going to be spent on an informational hearing on pre-apprenticeship programs and with a particular focus on how we can ease the pathway for ex-offenders to re-enter the workforce and be productive members of society. Before we get to that, though, we have a few work sessions that we need to do, a few bills that we need to pass out. And let me say, first of all, that a couple of these bills will be carried over to Wednesday, first of which is House Bill 3025A. That is the ban the box bill that we'll be dealing with that on Wednesday. And then House Bill 2544, the interim bargaining bill, that, too, we'll be dealing with on Wednesday. So those two will be carried forward. So we're going to go directly to House Bill 3058. Senator Rosenbaum?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3058A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 3058A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Matt, would you remind us of what 3058 does?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3058A permits retired Tier 1 and Tier 2 members of the public employee retirement system to work for school districts or education service districts as a teacher of career and technical education for an unlimited number of hours without loss of retirement benefits. It defines teacher of career technical education, sunsets June 30th, 2018, and declares emergency and is effective on passage. There's no fiscal impact or revenue impact statements issued.
Okay, thanks, Matt. Any discussion of this bill, 3058? Yes, Senator Knope.
Mr. Chair, we could make this better with the Dash 4 amendments. We could do some PERS reform.
One could.
It doesn't sound like you're terribly interested at this point.
You know, I think that that is a subject that deserves its own day.
All right.
Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection to the passage of this bill? Seeing none, House Bill 3058A passes. Anyone want to carry this?
You should have me carry it.
I will carry this. Close the work session at 3058.
Yes. I
will now open a work session on House Bill 3303A.
Chair Dembro, I move to adopt the Dash A3 amendments dated May 26, 2015.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved to adopt the A3 amendment stated May 26, 2015. Matt, why don't you tell us what this is and what the amendments are?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 3303A expands disadvantaged enterprise certification to service-disabled veteran-owned businesses. It changes the name of the Office for Minority Women and Emerging Small Business within the Oregon Business Development Department to the Certification Office for Business Inclusion and Diversity. It changes the name of the Advocate for Minority Women and Emerging Small Business to the Governor's Advisor for Economic and Business Equity. It declares emergency and is effective on passage. The Dash A3 amendments resolve conflicts with Senate Bill 584 and House Bill 2716.
Thank you, Matt. Any discussion of this? We heard this last Wednesday. Matt, does this mean that we no longer will call them MWESBs?
That is correct. The name of the office will change. We can still use the acronym to describe the businesses themselves, although we might need to add a V for veteran-owned or an SDV for service-disabled veteran-owned.
This is too much, but, yeah, it's a great bill, I think. Is there any further discussion of the bill? Is there any objection to the bill?
The amendments?
To the amendments, right. To the amendments. Okay, seeing none, the amendments are so ordered. Senator Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 3303 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 3303A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion of the main motion? Any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. Who'd like to carry this one?
I would be happy to, Mr. Guy.
Chair.
Thank you.
Sorry. Senator Gelzer will carry, I will close the work session on House Bill 3303A. And open a work session, a possible reconsideration and work session on House Bill 2472A, a Gelzer bill that almost died. Yes. This is one of our mortuary bills, right?
That's why that was funny. It didn't almost die. Yeah. But sometimes mortuaries have to do with death.
Mr. Chair, I move the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2472A.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved the rules be suspended for the purpose of reconsidering the vote on House Bill 2472A. This motion is not debatable. Is there any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the rules are suspended.
Mr. Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2472A was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved to reconsider the vote by which House Bill 2472A was sent to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, any objection to the motion? Seeing none. Motion carries. This motion is once again before us. And before we get into the motion, Matt, could you tell us why we need to reconsider this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is one of those having to do with the Mortuary Board.
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill allows the Mortuary and Cemetery Board to establish self-inspection programs to supplement biennial inspections and allows the board to set criteria through rule by which exempt operating cemeteries will not be subject to biennial inspection. It repeals statutes on magistrate-issued warrants for inspection of facilities under board jurisdiction. The reason this is in front of us now is because we adopted the Dash A2 amendments in this committee, and those amendments, the language of them doesn't quite do what the board sought for it to do, and it made its way all the way through our process before the ambiguity in that language really surfaced. And so the Dash A3 amendments were written to clarify what the purpose of the A2s was, and now we seek to adopt the A3s.
Thank you. Okay, Senator Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, I move we reconsider the vote by which the Dash A2 amendments dated May 19th, 2015 were adopted.
Okay. Senator Rosenbaum has moved to reconsider the vote by which the committee adopted the A2 amendments dated May 19th, 2015. Colleagues, I think we're about halfway there in dealing with this issue. Is there any discussion of this motion?
Just to clarify,
yeah.
So if we reconsider, doesn't that just, does that, do we want to vote yes to bring these amendments up again, or does because the way the script is written has us reconsidering and then immediately adopting the Dash A3, are the A2s still going to stay in the bill?
The A2s will be removed from the bill.
So don't we have to do something to rescind their adoption? It just looks like the script next has us reconsidering the amendments.
Well,
reconsidering the vote by which the committee adopted the amendment, and then it seems to me we'd need one more step to vote no on those amendments and take them out.
If we want to suspend this work session for a minute, I can resolve this by the end of our meeting and confirm that we are following that motion. My understanding was by reconsidering we are essentially removing the amendments.
Oh, okay.
That's right.
That's fine then.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, is there any objection to our reconsidering the aye vote on the dash A2s? Seeing none, that motion passes. So now the motion passing House Bill 2472A is once again, or House Bill 2472A is once again before us in its original form. Senator Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash A3 amendments dated May 22, 2015.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved to adopt the A3 amendments dated May 22, 2015. Any discussion of our adopting these amendments? Seeing none, they are adopted. And finally, Senator.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2472A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Rosenbaum has moved House Bill 2472A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Colleagues, this is why we always want to get it right the first time. Okay, seeing none, is there any objection to this motion? Okay, seeing none, the motion carries and the bill is sent to the floor where it will be ably carried by Senator Gelser again. So with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2472A. Does Kim want to vote on these others? Do you want to vote on the other?
Do we reopen the work session for the purpose? I'm actually not sure how that works.
I think we have to suspend the rules. Somebody want to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that the rules be suspended so that Senator Thatcher can vote on House Bill 3058 and 3303.
Senator Gelser has moved that the rules be suspended to allow Senator Thatcher to vote on House Bill 3058A and House Bill 3303A. Any objection to that? Okay. Senator?
I think you might need to open a work session.
Reopen it?
Yeah, very quickly so that you can have her back on.
Okay, then. I will open a work session on House Bill 3058A, which passed on a 4-0 vote a few minutes ago.
I vote yes.
Okay. Senator Thatcher votes aye. I will close the work session on House Bill 3058A, open a work session on House Bill 3303A. Senator Thatcher?
I vote yes.
Okay. Senator Thatcher votes yes on House Bill 3303A. We are in a unanimous state of mind today, and with that, I will close that work session on House Bill 3303A. And at last, thank you for your patience, everyone, open our informational hearing on pre-apprenticeship programs. Matt, do you want to kick this off?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are talking today, as you mentioned before, about programs for ex-offenders as they work their way out of the prison system back into the workforce. Today we have from the Department of Corrections, Heidi Stewart. Is that correct? You can come forward.
And Ken Jeske as well.
And Ken, yes.
Okay, thank you both for coming, being part of this important discussion. And if you could just, when you begin your testimony, give us your name for the record, please.
So good afternoon. Chair Dembro and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Heidi Stewart. I'm the Assistant Director of the Offender Management and Rehabilitation Division with the Oregon Department of Corrections. And I'm here today to provide an overview of the department's vocational programs and to answer any questions you may have. So now here's the real test. Let's see if I can. There we go. So we're going to start out just briefly talking about our budget in this area. The Education and Training Unit is a part of the Offender Management and Rehabilitation Division within the Department of Corrections, and the department's vocational programs are a part of the education and training budget. For the 2013 and 15 biennium, the total education and training budget is approximately $16 million. This slide shows the proportional split between the funding sources for education and training. You can see the majority comes from general fund, which is 81% of the $16 million. This slide shows you the breakdown of how the $16 million education and training budget is distributed. The $12.6 million goes to adult basic education development continuum, and this is adult basic education, GED, English as a second language, and special education. $3.4 million goes to work-based education, and $134,000 goes to our apprenticeship programs. This slide shows the 2013-15 General Fund LAB distribution by program area. So our adult basic skills development continuum receives just under $12.4 million. Our work-based education programs, $590,000, and our apprenticeship programs, $134,000, for a total of $13 million of general fund. The department provides three types of vocational programs. These are work-based education, apprenticeship programs, and training programs. But before I go into describing each one of these in a little more detail, I'd like to point out that we know from research and experience the best way to help reduce recidivism and to help people become successful as they leave our prisons and enter into the community is to provide a combination of education, treatment, and job preparedness. This is why education and training programs are so vital. In fact, in 2013, a meta-analysis was conducted by the RAND Corporation that showed the odds of obtaining employment post-release for those individuals who participated in correctional education, and that's either academic or vocational programs, were 13% higher than the odds for those who did not. More specifically, those individuals who participated in vocational training programs were 28% more likely to obtain employment after release from prison than those who did not. So these types of programs we view as being very critical. So this slide just has a couple of pictures of our automotive technology program and welding program, which are two of our work-based education programs. And I'll start out talking about our work-based education programs. The department contracts with community colleges to provide six work-based education programs. These programs are designed to integrate sound business practices, customer service, and quality control, which are learned and practiced in the production unit. The production component of each program is a real work setting that provides services and/or products that generate modest revenue to offset the cost of the materials and supplies of the program. Inmates are considered for work-based education programs by submitting requests for consideration or applying during a recruitment process. For acceptance and entrance into our work-based education programs, an individual is required to have a high school diploma or GED, to have minimum math and reading scores, to have enough time remaining on their sentence to complete the program, and to meet other specific criteria that's particular to that work-based education program. This table outlines our six work-based education programs. It provides quite a bit of detail. Just to name the six, we have the Building Construction Technology Program, Computer Technology Certified Para-Optometric, which is our eyeglass recycling program, Hair Design, Automotive Technology, and Welding Certification. The curriculum of each program aligns with industry-specific skill sets and the college requirements for programs offering college certificates and degrees. These programs serve over 320 inmates in a biennium. In the 11-13 biennium, 280 inmates were enrolled in work-based education programs, and another 43 additional inmates successfully completed the program and continued as production workers. The numbers of participants in the program are driven by several factors, which include space constraints and teacher-to-student ratios. As an example, our cosmetology instructor can only have 20 students because her credential puts that limit in place. This graph displays the overall completion rate for work-based education programs in the 2011-13 biennium. We had 220 successful completions, which is an 89% success rate. Employment data for those who have returned to the community is not available. Some instructors may research this informally for their students, but we don't have the data readily accessible. And this chart breaks down the successful completion numbers by each work-based education program. And now we'll move on and talk a little bit about our apprenticeship programs. The department's apprenticeship program is a partnership between our education and training unit, BOLI, our institution physical plants, and BOLI regional apprenticeship training committees. The apprenticeship program provides a standardized training opportunities to inmates in various trades that are recognized and improved by the apprenticeship training division of BOLI. An inmate apprentice will complete up to 4 years of trade-specific on-the-job training around work processes in addition to 144 hours annually of trade-specific instruction. The instruction is accomplished through the use of certified learning program at the expense of the inmate apprentice. The programs are operated just like an apprenticeship in the community, with two exceptions, and that is two exceptions that BOLI has allowed: an increase in the journey worker to apprentice ratio and an exemption to the wage requirement. These programs are designed for individuals who have 7 to 10 years left on their sentence. Additionally, to participate in apprenticeship programs, interested individuals must be approved by security to work in the physical plant, have a high school diploma or GED, have clear conduct, be willing to pay for the program, and have a minimum math score. The on-site supervision of the apprentice is by the department's physical plant staff. Upon completion of an apprenticeship program, all participants receive a journeyman card from BOLI, while those completing an electrical program are also offered the opportunity to test for electrical license. After achieving journeyman status, inmates apply their skills by working in our physical plants, in correctional industries, in inmate work programs, and work-based education programs. There are currently 6 apprenticeship programs offered within the department, which include both licensed and non-licensed programs. These are limited maintenance plant journeyman, limited maintenance electrician, limited building maintenance electrician, sheet metal, painting, and cabinet making. The department has enjoyed a strong collaborative partnership with BOLI for many years. BOLI's willingness to assist our department's process has not only made it possible for us to offer a number of programs to help inmates develop specific skills that will assist them in obtaining employment upon release, but the partnership has helped our apprenticeships and training programs flourish. We continually work with BOLI to look for ways to expand our apprenticeship programs. As an example, HVAC is a viable employment field in the community, and we have opportunities for on-the-job training in a number of our institutions. However, HVAC requires a large upfront cost and in training supplies and materials. This graph displays the overall completion rate for our apprenticeship programs. In the 2011-13 biennium, we had a 57% completion rate. Exits prior to completion could occur for a number of reasons: behavioral issues, inmates just drop the program, or they release prior to the program actually ending. There are 27 apprentices in 4 apprenticeship areas during the 2011-13 biennium. This table breaks down the participants by apprenticeship trade and then by the number of completions, number of those that exited the programs before completing the programs, and the number that were still in the program at the end of that biennium. Again, employment data for these areas or for these programs is not available. Whoops, there we go. Thank you. Now, before I move on to the third category, which is our training programs, I wanted to talk about a potential program. The construction-related employment for women, or what we call the CREW program, is a work-based education program that has been proposed by Portland Community College to be facilitated at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. I won't get into the details about this program since Jen Netherwood is here and I believe is going to speak to you about some of the specifics around this program, but I will say that PCC has worked with Boley to have the CREW program certified as a construction trades pre-apprenticeship program. Unlike our current apprenticeship and training programs, they are built around inmates working full-time. CREW is an education program that also fulfills the requirements of a pre-apprenticeship program. This is why the cost this is why there's additional costs to start and run the program. Now we'll talk about the third component of our training, and which is our training programs. We have collaborated with Boley to create training programs that are run by the department's joint training committee. The programs are designed to be shorter in duration and match work assignments already inside our prisons. This allows our incarcerated population with shorter sentences and who are housed in minimum custody facilities the ability to participate in a vocational program and receive Boley certification. Training programs are not as strict as the accreditation and supervision requirements of our apprenticeship programs, and this allows us to utilize facility maintenance specialists for the supervision of these trainees. With the apprenticeship trades, the supervision must be trade specific. So, for example, a painter can supervise painting apprentices. Our custodial training program began in 2013, and the welding training program began in 2014, so this is still fairly new. In addition to these two programs, we are exploring a culinary training program. And so that concludes my piece of the presentation. I'm going to hand it over to Ken Jeske to talk about Oregon Corrections Enterprises and what they offer.
Thank you very much, Heidi. Ken?
Good afternoon, Chair Dembrough and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ken Jeske. I'm the administrator for Oregon Corrections Enterprises, and I will refer to Oregon Corrections Enterprises as OCE throughout the presentation. I'm here today to provide an overview of OCE and to answer any questions that you have, and I'll start by providing you an overview and history of OCE.
Sorry,
as soon as we...
Thank you. Okay.
OCE was established in December of 1999 through the passage of Ballot Measure 68. We are a semi-independent state agency whose revenue is generated through the sale of our products and our services with no direct general funding support and separate from the Department of Corrections. However, the administrator does serve at the pleasure of the DOC's director. Our mission for OCE is in partnership with the Department of Corrections is to promote public safety by promoting or providing inmate work opportunities and training opportunities in a self-sustaining organization. The mission of OCE directly supports DOC's, ultimately the two agencies share a fundamental goal to improve public safety, and the Oregon legislator established OCE as a semi-independent agency to ensure that we provide those work opportunities. This next graph shows you a historical overview of the inmate participation numbers. From the early 2000s, the number of inmates participating in OCE's program grew steadily. In the past, inmate growth was attributed to large manufacturing projects such as prison construction. During the recession, manufacturing work opportunities declined. As a result, OCE made investments in growing its service industries. While manufacturing opportunities have remained constant post-recession, the growth that OCE has experienced has been in its laundry and contact center operations. The work skills certification completions are 71%, the number of inmates participating do get their certificates at 71%. The work skills certification program was established in 2005 as a 12-month industry-specific curriculum to complement the hands-on training inmates received while working in OCE industries. The program grew steadily, and up until 2012, it, included a telecommunications certification program. However, in 2012, the program was suspended by the OCE administrator. OCE is currently working towards reestablishing the telecommunications certification program in each of the six contact centers that we operate. For the 2014-15 fiscal year, we're expecting 255 work skill graduates. This next graph gives you an idea of what businesses that we operate and the number of inmates working in there. We maintain a variety of business lines to ensure agency continuity. A critical part of OCE structure is to ensure its programs are cost-effective. OCE retains diverse business lines which allow for the greatest work and training opportunities to ensure OCE remains financially self-sustainable. Today, we have 1,342 adults in our custody that are participating in 24 separate businesses within the 8 facilities across the state that we operate. Those numbers are provided for you. The largest that you will note is the contact centers and our laundry facilities.
And Ken, what are the contact centers again?
Chair Dembro, the contact centers are where the inmates are hired by DMV or DEQ to answer calls. They also have some private industries, and they're not calling homes. They're contacting businesses. The certification programs, our work skill certification classes are offered in 8 correctional facilities. They are a 12-month curriculum that provides industry-specific trainings. The inmates receive a work skills certificate upon successful completion. The program provides industry transferable skills to the community. And the 6-month curriculum safely orientates inmates into laundry sort operations, where the inmates receive a certificate as well. Programs participation eligibility is very similar to the Department of Corrections. They have to have 6-month clear conduct. They have to be within 6 years of their release date. Some of the questions that I commonly get asked are how many of the inmates participating in your program life sentences. So I will tell you that out of the 1,300 inmates, 13% of those do have life sentences. They have to possess a high school diploma or a GED, and they have to be compliant with the institution program. OCE is moving towards providing BULLY industry recognized apprenticeship certification programs. The one program currently in place began in March of 2015, and it's under the structural welding offered by Cascade Joint Training Council. The institutions that are offered are at the Oregon State Penitentiary and the Mill Creek Correctional Facility. Currently, there are 9 inmates participating in that program, and as an example, they have to obtain 2,000 hours of on-the-job activity to get that certificate. OCE is in the process of implementing the BULLY recognized custodial training offered as well by Cascade Joint Training Council in all of our industry locations. The next slide will show you what our fiscal data has been over the past several years. Our revenue and net income streams remain consistent with positive net income, and OCE continues to maintain self-sustainability. OCE has experienced 1 year with a negative net income in the past 11 years, which was the result of a substantial revenue decline in manufacturing operations due to the economic downturn that occurred in 2008. Planned capital expenditures for the agency currently, we have about $2.8 million in capital expenses that we would like to implement, and we'll be considering that as we move forward. We do have some constraints. The supervision of our inmate electricians, that is one of our apprenticeship programs. The statute that we recently recognized did not authorize OCE electricians to supervise the inmate is now on hold, but we anticipate pursuing some legislative action on that in the next session. The other constraint that we that we are running into is that the DOC security staffing costs to implement new programs is a contributing factor to not being able to move some things forward as quickly as we'd like. The future of OCE, we have pursuing new business opportunities. OCE is operating at capacity in some of our operations. For example, at the penitentiary, we have 42% of the inmate population working in our industry, and we still have to leave plenty of room for the Department of Corrections to operate. We have a new advisory council. I'm very excited about that. The new business strategy team is a subcommittee from that we are pulling in businessmen across the state to educate them on what OCE is about and how we can support them in their efforts, and especially in expanding the opportunities with the Governor's Reentry Council under Dick Withnell, who we participate in those programs to see how we can help close that gap with these skills going to the community. And with that, that concludes my presentation. Thanks for your interest with OCE. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you both. Let me start out with a global question, and that is how the two sides of the House interact and work together, avoid duplication, et cetera.
Chair Dembrough and members of the committee, I'd like to answer that question. The way the two interact well is that I sit as a member of the policy group and involved in all the decisions and the operations of the business, as well as give them more of an insight as to how OCE is operating. We operate more transparent than in the past and have overcome many of the obstacles by having the OCE program managers attending the DOC's operations meetings and actually sharing the transparency in the cost of running the OCE opportunities inside, and we're sharing in those costs much more effectively.
Do you have anything to add to that?
Chair, I'll add that OCE simply can't just come into an institution and drop a program. They have to work very closely with the institution to work out the logistics of the program, the selection of the inmates, the security that's going to be around that program. So we do work very, very closely with each other as we implement new programs.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Vice Chair Thatcher.
Thanks. Thanks for the presentation. Heidi, you mentioned a couple of things that brought to mind a couple of questions that I have.
Okay.
You mentioned that depending on if they have enough time in their sentence, left in their sentence to complete a program, that would depend on their eligibility to enter the program, I guess. But I'm wondering, is there any room or ability for somebody continuing a program outside once they are released? In other words, they might not have enough time to complete an electrician's certificate program or apprenticeship, but they could start it, and then is there some sort of outside agreement or ability to continue that?
Chair and Senator, certainly they could continue that on the outside. I would have to double check to see what our partnership is with those community based entities, so I can get back to you with a more specific answer. But the answer is yes, they can. I just don't know how often that happens and what our relationship's like.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it would just be good that if somebody was more interested in something and not be penalized, or you can't enter that because you don't have enough time in your sentence, you didn't do something drastic enough. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like bad incentive.
So you could begin it on the inside and finish it on the outside.
For our apprenticeship programs, however, we do like them to have a long sentence, because the staff that have the skills to be their instructors are located in our medium custody institution, so they have to be able to complete that apprenticeship program at a medium custody facility, and then they move to our minimum custody facility where they actually work and use those skills. So if they were in our electrical apprenticeship program, they'd be an electrician in our minimum custody institution. So we like it to flow like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I have another question.
Yes, please.
Jumping over to, you had a little pie chart that mentioned successful completions, and it looked like a pretty high percentage, like 43% are not completing for whatever reason. Do you find out why? Are there some particular barriers? Did they leave custody earlier than expected? What, I mean?
Yeah, sometimes the release date will change. They'll leave sooner. Sometimes they just get into trouble and have to go to the segregation. They're pulled out of the program for those reasons. Or sometimes they just realize, this isn't for me. I really don't want to be a painter, or I really don't want to be an electrician, and they'll elect to drop out of the program. But you're right. The rate of the completion rate is actually very high.
And then Chair Denbrough and Senator Thatcher, I'll add one piece to that. Oftentimes when they're entering those programs and they can find themselves a job in Oregon Corrections Enterprise, that sometimes that'll pull them away too, because it is a higher PRAS points for them.
Let me follow up on that question. Heidi, you mentioned that you don't have a way currently of tracking outcomes, you know, in terms of once inmates have exited, how they're doing in the workforce.
Correct.
To see if inmates who've been through a program are doing a better job of getting jobs.
Right.
than those who don't. That really strikes me as very important information. So what are, and Ken, I might ask you the same question as well. What are the obstacles to track that information?
Currently, one, we don't have a data system that we can pull that information from. So while the instructors may be collecting that information from their class participants, it's very difficult to get to just quickly pull that information. We do realize that the information is very important and does help determine how successful these programs are. And so we are working on various ways to be able to get that information from other state agencies and to feed that into our system. So we're working on it. No solutions as of yet, but we do realize that it's important.
Mm-hmm. And Ken, are you in the same situation?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. I think it really will be important to get that information. And as we pay more attention to this area and hopefully are, you know, can put more resources into programs like this, it'll be easier, you know, if they have a clear track record of success. So, Heidi, you mentioned that in the apprenticeship programs, the inmates pay their own costs of materials, I think. Could you elaborate on that and give us a sense of how expensive these are and where they get the money for it?
Yes, they have to have the ability to pay for the program. As I mentioned, I think we only have $134,000 that we spend on apprenticeship programs. I don't have the cost of the programs with me, the average cost of what an individual pays, so we'll go ahead and include that when we respond within the next 24 hours.
Okay, that's great. No, okay. I'd like to know if that is creating a barrier for some inmates. Is it your sense that it is not?
I'm sure it's creating a barrier for some individuals, but certainly our programs are full, so it's not keeping the program from filling up.
Great. Yeah. And then finally, you mentioned the CRU program, and we'll be hearing more about it. So what is on the table right now for the future of CRU?
Right now, we have a great proposal. We believe in the program. We would like to offer it at the Coffee Creek Correctional Facility. I'm simply waiting for my budget for the upcoming biennium to determine what that's going to look like.
Mm-hmm. And so if the budget is solid, then you'll be able to move forward?
If the budget's solid, yeah.
Okay. Thank
yes.
you. Other questions? Okay, thank you both of you for
thank
leading
you
off
this.
Thank
you very much for the invitation.
Great. Okay, I'm going to call up Jen Netherwood, Megan Moyer, and Dr. Karen Edwards, please. Do you three have a sense of what the best way to start this off is?
I would love to.
Thanks, Jen.
Good afternoon, Chairman Denbrough and committee members. For the record, my name is Jen Netherwood, and I am a carpenter with Multnomah County. I'm an instructor and a volunteer with Oregon Tradeswomen, and I'm also a journey-level carpenter with Local Union 1503. I'm also the parent of a very lively 7-year-old, And in my free time, I am an education volunteer for Portland Community College, and I've been working to raise awareness about the needs for construction trades pre-apprenticeship training for incarcerated women. A little bit of history. From October 2012 to August 2013, I was a vocational instructor at Coffee Creek Correctional Facility teaching a BOLI-certified pre-apprenticeship program to women in the medium facility. The most amazing thing I saw happen in that very short period of time was the sense of pride that grew within so many of the women. They started to tell me stories about conversations they had with their kids and their families and how amazed their kids were that their moms could use a skill saw and a table saw, and they all wanted to build stuff with their moms when they got out. I had one woman show me an article that her mother sent to her while she was incarcerated about how she was one of the very first low-voltage female electricians for Pac Bell. And this inmate hadn't spoken to her mom in years, and they reconnected because the inmate wrote her mom a letter and said, "Hey, I'm participating in this pre-apprenticeship program." Inmate had no idea that her mom had done this, and they got to connect because of her participation in the program. Unfortunately, in August of 2013, just 8 months after the program had started, it was canceled. At that time, 40 out of 44 women had completed 2 9-week sessions and had successfully completed the program and earned 250 pre-apprenticeship hours. We had solid partnerships with 5 union construction trades apprenticeship programs, and we had enthusiastic buy-in from the security staff, from the inmates, prison officials, and in fact, I had 2 staff members come and tell me that they had begun to see improvements in behavior in some of the inmates because of their desire to enter the construction trades pre-apprenticeship program. My experience at Coffee Creek absolutely changed my life. I had never been inside a prison or a jail. I had never given one moment of thought to working in corrections. It was an opportunity that came to me through Oregon Tradeswomen. And my gray area for what I thought I knew about the prison system grew exponentially, and I really developed a much broader lens for being able to look at some of these big problems. And the most profound realization that I had is that I found something that I could do that could really make a difference. So for the past 22 months, I have been working to develop and raise support and awareness for CREW, the new construction trades pre-apprenticeship program that's proposed at Coffee Creek. As Heidi Stewart mentioned, it's already been approved by BOLI and the Oregon State Apprenticeship and Training Council. I've had a dozen conversations with union apprenticeship coordinators who tell me, "Jen, as soon as you get that program in there, come talk to us. We want to partner with you." CREW has had official support letters from folks like the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters, the NECA IBEW Electrical Training Center, Oregon Tradeswomen, the Oregon Washington Roofers and Waterproofers, Portland Youth Builders, and Habitat for Humanity. There's not a lot of information about existing pre-apprenticeship training programs in women's prisons, but I want to bring your attention to a program called TRAC, Trades-Related Apprenticeship Coaching. And this is a program operating in our neighbor state up at the Washington Correctional Center for Women. TRAC has been in existence for 10 years. Unfortunately, tracking information is not available for all of those years, but the current instructor there did send me the tracking information for the last 2 years. So 34 women have successfully completed that program in 5 16-week sessions. 29 of them have been released into the community. 7 are actively employed as apprentices in either the laborers, carpenters, or ironworkers unions. And 3 more are in the application process or in the dispatch process. They also have a 0% recidivism rate. Perhaps the most valuable things that I learned from the previous program are just lessons on how to build a program at Coffee Creek that can be sustainable in the long run. And the number one thing I learned is that for a pre-apprenticeship program to exist at Coffee Creek, it needs to be set on an education and training foundation with the goal of cost-reducing self-sufficiency. And that's why CREW really fits best as a work-based education program administered by Portland Community College, and it would operate in the minimum facility. work-based education programs at Coffee Creek all have a component of self-sufficiency and have proven statistically to have extremely low recidivism rates. CREW will also be tied to community partnerships. And this is something that I think for the pre-apprenticeship program is absolutely critical to motivating these women to want to make changes, because they get the opportunity to do something while they're still in prison to affect their communities in a positive way. And the biggest partnership that I've developed for CREW is with Habitat for Humanity. And so the cost-reducing element to this is that Habitat for Humanity would donate materials to us. And they said, any materials you want, Jen, you just let us know. We would build furniture for Habitats that would be sold in their restores. And as part of that, with each piece of furniture that would go out into the community, Habitat wants to work with CREW to develop a community awareness program where each piece of furniture would go out with a card that profiles the CREW program and a profile of the woman who actually built the piece of furniture. So I just think it's fantastic. CREW will be a longer program than other existing programs in the community. We have built the program to be about 1,000 hours of pre-apprenticeship training, which is by far one of the longest pre-apprenticeship training programs in the country. But this is also a lesson that I learned with working with women in the prison, is that they are going to require a lot of soft skills training. I can teach them how to use a skill saw in about 10 minutes and not cut their finger off. But what I have to teach them to show up on time and work hard is going to take, that's where the bulk of the training in this program is going to be centered. One of the main things that I learned is the follow-up services that are going to have to be attached to CREW. We can't just have a program in the prison, open the gate, let them out, and shake our hands. And there's not another pre-apprenticeship program in this state that doesn't have job placement or clothing and tool assistance. All the other pre-apprenticeships in this state are successful because they follow up with their graduates after the person completes the program. In the prison, CREW is going to have to address two very specific to incarcerated women needs. And the first one is the ability to get their driver's license upon parole. one of the requirements for getting into CREW is that they would be able to have the opportunity to get their driver's license after they parole. But there's a lot of work that needs to be done around that issue to make sure that they get that. It's critical for them getting a job in the construction industry. And the other one is looking at the possibility of the majority of these women being allowed to parole to Multnomah County, where the majority of the full-time apprenticeship programs are housed. To reach the highest number of CREW, I have two proposals. One is the regular pre-apprenticeship program, which would serve 20 to 22 women. These women would have between 12 and 15, 16 months left on their sentences. And this number is based on a realistic assessment of what I think one instructor can do on the follow-up and job placement, as well as shop supervision and safety. But to reach the highest number of women at Coffee Creek, my other proposal is for a partnership with Oregon Tradeswomen and Constructing Hope, where we would take women who may not have enough time left on their sentence and put them on a track to enter into one of those two pre-apprenticeship programs upon parole. And I've had this conversation with Oregon Tradeswomen, and we think it's extremely viable that we can put a number of women on a track to direct entry when they parole into those pre-apprenticeship programs. I want our union apprenticeship coordinators in Oregon and our contractors in construction and manufacturing to come to Coffee Creek as a place to recruit qualified women. The biggest barrier to women entering the construction trades is quite simply perception. Women just don't think they can do this job. And every time I go to Coffee Creek and give a presentation, one woman always raises her hand and says, "Ms. Netherwood, I had no idea women could even do this job." And it just, it strikes me every time they say that, but this is the biggest barrier that we're up against. And pre-apprenticeship programs in Oregon have been successful because they're telling women that they can have this job. I want to talk for just a minute about Oregon tradeswomen. A third of all registered female apprentices in the state of Oregon are graduates of OTI, and I'm a graduate of OTI, and I'm a journey-level carpenter. The national average percentage of women, apprentice or journey level, in the construction trades industry in our nation is less than 3%. In Oregon, of apprentices alone, women are 6%. However, in Oregon, of 136 apprenticeship programs, 74 of those, which is half, still have zero female apprentices. Oregon absolutely needs another pre-apprenticeship program that focuses on women to increase the number of women in the construction industry. And incarcerated women absolutely need a means to family wage jobs. And this is my sales pitch. CREW can address both of these statewide needs in one program for a very small budget. Just lastly, Coffee Creek houses about 1,200 women. And 48% of those women assessed during intake were found to be in need of job skills upgrades. And I highly doubt this number is any lower in any other prison in the nation. And this is why my goal to bring CREW to Coffee Creek in the last 22 months has expanded to something much bigger. I want to start a national dialogue and a movement towards the development of construction trades pre-apprenticeship programs in women's prisons all throughout the United States. The time is now, and I want the program, the TRAC program up in Washington and the CREW program in Oregon to be national leaders on this thing that's just got to be done. Not only will the pre-apprenticeship training program in the women's prisons contribute to reducing recidivism and mass incarceration, but it will also be a positive step toward creating a more gender equitable construction industry. And just in closing, for the incarcerated women at Coffee Creek and other incarcerated women across the country, a construction trades pre-apprenticeship training program can set them on a path to a real family wage career, increase their self-esteem, motivate them to become a positive contributor to society, give them a tangible connection back to their family, and ultimately can break the cycle of incarceration. And I sincerely appreciate your time, and I'm honored to have been part of this conversation, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much for that really excellent presentation, Jen. You should know that Coffee Creek is in Senator Thatcher's district. However, Jen is my constituent. So. Okay, Megan.
Chair Dembo, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm the Government Relations Director for Portland Community College. I am also on the board of Oregon Tradeswomen. I'm excited for the opportunity to come and speak on this topic. Portland Community College is proud to be an open access institution and to serve the entire community. And we have a long history of serving individuals who come to us after periods of time being engaged in the criminal justice system. And we are proud to be able to offer several different resources. I've brought Dr. Karen Edwards, the president of our Cascade campus, with me today to talk particularly about the work of the Margaret Carter Skill Center. But I also very much appreciate Jen's presentation, and I think that highlights our long relationship with the Department of Corrections and the innovative ideas that we're proud to be associated with and hope very much get to move forward. The thing that the only comments that I want to make before I turn it over to Dr. Edwards is what draws me and also what draws PCC to look at how we can serve our community better is when we look at how do you create opportunities for individuals to improve their lives and how can we serve people when they come to us or however they come to us. And one of the areas that I'm passionate about is creating educational opportunities that fit individuals who may have significant barriers toward their success. And I think that The trades is an opportunity that is unique for lots of people, where longer programs or programs that require significant time dedication without employment can be huge barriers, particularly to single parents. Or others who have other commitments in their life. Something unique about going into the trades is that due to the structure of apprenticeship programs, you can begin working and earning a wage while you're learning, and you're building skills while being employed and supporting your family. And that is something that can create opportunities for people who otherwise would have other obligations that would create significant barriers. Also, that historically in the building trades, criminal records, as long as an individual can demonstrate significant change in their life and show a pattern of responsibility, one can overcome something that may show up on a criminal background check, depending on that, what that is. And that's something that is really important to make sure that we are creating opportunities for people to change their lives, and PCC is very dedicated to that. And so I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Edwards to talk specifically about some of the programming that we have at PCC.
Thank you, ma'am. Karen, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Chair Dembrough, members of the Workforce Committee, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Karen Edwards. I'm the president of the Cascade Campus for Portland Community College. And thank you so much for this opportunity. The Margaret Carter Skills Center was founded, it was the Skills Center founded in 1989, and in 2007, it was named in honor of Senator Carter, another supporter and champion for North Northeast Portland. It was designed to provide workforce readiness for the unemployed, underemployed, and underskilled. The program goals are to help the participants achieve self-sufficiency through educational and occupational training, to help match skills and workforce needs, to help these individuals find and keep jobs, and also to prepare them for the demands of workforce. In order to qualify to participate with the Skills Center, you have to be at least 18 years old, demonstrate an ability to benefit, give them a test to see where they are on their reading, writing, and mathematical skills. There's no tuition. Students only pay a nominal fee, which are college service fees, in order to participate. We offer a variety of classes to the participants that include communication and written and oral communication, applied mathematics, computer literacy. There's some foundational skills in reading and writing. There's principles of technology, and then there's career and employment exploration. So we have different people come in from industries to share with them what the requirements are for those different types of jobs. Students who graduate from the program get a certificate of completion in principles of technology, and that certificate indicates that they are ready to enter the workforce, start an apprenticeship program, or perhaps pursue their associate or certificate program with PCC. We have a number of community partners that help in this effort. They help both recruit students or refer students to the Skills Center, or help place them in jobs once they're done. And just a few of them include the Housing Authority of Portland, the Urban League, the City of Portland, Oregon Tradeswomen, Better People, Goodwill, Self-Enhancement Incorporated, and the Department of Human Services. Approximately 2,000 students have come through the Skills Center in the last 12 years. About 75% are ethnic minorities. About 51% are males. The average age of the participants is 37. Many of them go on to complete a degree, but for the most part, they all are looking for work right after. We have a direct connection to our trades program, so we have a recruiter who works both for the Skills Center and the trades program to provide them with information about our programs. We offer degrees in limited maintenance electrician, millwright, facilities maintenance, industrial mechanics, and HVAC installer. We're currently working to develop programs in basic health, customer service and hospitality, and some pre-apprentice programs. So the pathway for students who come through the Skills Center are either work, continue their education with a college, or an apprenticeship program. And I want to note at least two of our partners who specifically work with individuals who have had legal issues, and that's Better People and Constructing Hope. both of those organizations, their mission is to help students rebuild their lives, individuals rebuild their lives. And about 40%, maybe a little bit more, of our referrals come from those two organizations. So we have strong partnerships with them. We certainly work hard to prepare students to be ready for their transition and support them even after they're done. On our website, we noticed or highlighted one of the recent graduates from the Skills Center, Rudy, who came through Better People, who's now a licensed journeyman as well, and well on his way to earning a salary. He said he was the last of his friends to kind of get his life together, but he credited the Skills Center for getting him started. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Karen, for that. And I should note for the record that when I'm not here, Karen is my boss. So so I'll be very kind to you, Karen. Uh-huh. My question. questions of the panel?
No, I just think it's great, especially Jen talking about how it reduces recidivism if people can find a job. And it's not only that, it reduces the reliance on social services too, so they can become independent and contributing members of society and get fully back into good graces with with everybody. So that's a good idea.
Yeah, I also appreciated the point about the CREW program being an important tool in the effort to diversify the workforce. Right, I just had a meeting with some contractors last week who we're saying they'd like to have more women working for them, but they just can't find any. And having women who really understand the trade and who are skilled at it, I think is it's an exceptional opportunity. We talked earlier about the situation of students who might exit a prison program before they've completed and what kind of pathway we could perhaps put them on, with the partnership with the community college. And Jen, you were kind of intimating that that's something that you were already doing, when you were, with thinking about the next steps for students in your program. Can you say something more about the sort of pathways that can be created for women once they have exited?
Sure. As I mentioned, I realize that there's a diverse group of women at Coffee Creek with different sentence lengths, different needs for job skills, and the main pre-apprenticeship program at Coffee Creek will take those women who have about 15 months left on their sentence. Once they parole, working with reentry programs, working with Oregon tradeswomen, working with Constructing Hope to get them any follow-up services they need will be critical. To be honest, I don't know exactly how it's going to look, but it's something that I learned from the first program, is that if we don't follow these women beyond the gate, they're going to struggle to succeed. The other group of women there would be women who have 8 months or 7 months on their sentence, and they're like, but I qualify, this is a great program, and building that partnership with Oregon tradeswomen. And those women will have various skills, but they will all leave Coffee Creek with the understanding of what pre-apprenticeship training can do and what they will need to do, including getting their driver's license, and perhaps they can work on that while they're still in, so that when they do parole, they're ready to enter a pre-apprenticeship program. Some of them may be ready and have enough job skill training to enter, to apply for an apprenticeship program, and that's my goal, is to reach those women to, and identify what specific need they have, and whether it's a partnership and a direct entry with Oregon tradeswomen or Constructing Hope, or a PCC program, or if they are ready to rock and roll and go right to the carpenters to apply. I'm not sure if that answered your question.
Yeah, no, this is obviously a long-term project that we're working on, and we are looking at creating either a legislative task force or a work group out of this committee that is going to be looking specifically at removing barriers for ex-offenders, both in employment and also in housing, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. once they reenter. Both of those are serious problems. And I think having, you know, clear pathways, but also, and you alluded to this, really working on the soft skills as well as the hard skills is really important. Something that people are starting to talk about, and Senator Thatcher, you can help me with this, is certificates of something or other.
Oh, boy.
We heard talk about yes. it last week. Certificates of, you know, that show that, you know, you are a, you know, a good worker, and not in the technical side, but, you know, you've served your time, you're worth an investment. I don't know if you know the name of that.
I do, but I don't know the exact acronym, but it's the yeah. National
Career Readiness?
Not the Career Readiness Certificate. No, that's more technical, like how your math and writing and thinking skills. But there's being developed, and I think it exists, an analog on the soft skills side, you know, for people who have shown that they can be reliable workers, you know, have good work ethic, can show up on time, et cetera. And it's something that's being talked about in the world of transitioning out of prison. Mm-hmm. Megan, were you going to say something?
Yeah, Chair Nimmo, members of the committee. I was just going to add that one of the advantages of PCC, and we're working very closely with Oregon Tradeswomen to be able to transcript their pre-apprenticeship program, is the portability of that training, and that it is recognized and meets standards and can actually get you one of your building blocks toward some further training. So I think that there's already some advantages of having the structure being one that is transcripted.
That's great. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, all three of you, for coming.
Thank you.
We have one last speaker, and that is Dave Allen from Oregon Employment Department. And Andrew, you're going to come up too. Make sure we don't beat up on Dave. Thank you very much, Dave. I understand you're going to have to leave soon, so sorry.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Dembo, members of the committee. I'm Andrea Folk with the Oregon Employment Department, and I have Dave Allen with me. And we would like to hopefully add to the discussion you've been having with some programs that are available and part of the pre-apprenticeship work.
Mr. Chair, Chairman, Committee members, my name is Dave Allen. I'm the Senior Analyst for the Business and Employment Services Division at the Employment Department. I understand you're looking for some information on three things at this point. The Employment Department's participation in pre-apprenticeship programs, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit, as well as some federal bonding. As far as the pre-apprenticeship programs, right now we're very much in the early stages of developing our role, our participation in the apprenticeship program. So we have some high-level management engaged in that, and we are collaborating with other agencies. But at this point, it's really very preliminary in terms of our participation. Regarding the federal bonding, the agency does participate in the federal bonding program. Employers are eligible to get a $5,000 fidelity bond for folks that qualify for it. It is free to the employers, and right now I would say that there's not a lot of usage in this program. During fiscal year 2014, only 6 applications were approved for the federal bonding program, and those numbers look fairly consistent over the course of, I don't know, 5 years or so. And then regarding the Work Opportunity Tax Credit program, it is a federal program. It is really run by the IRS, and then the Department of Labor helps administer the program from the federal level. The goal of the program is to provide incentives to the employer community to hire individuals with significant barriers to employment. Ex-felons would be one of the target populations that would fall within the tax credit. The Employment Department is the agency that makes the determination here within Oregon. So employers submit a couple of federal forms to our agency. They're reviewed against this, the data sets that we have, and then we may issue the determination to the employer. A key thing with that is the employer community needs to keep in mind that they only have 28 days to submit the applications from once the individual starts work. And so sometimes that can be an issue. And then tax credits run $2,400, you know, on average $2,400 up to $9,600 for a disabled unemployed veteran. And just to kind of give you an idea what the flow looks like, we received about 41,000 applications in fiscal year 14. And at that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that the committee has.
Great. Thank you very much for that, Dave. Following up on that last point, so of those 41,000 applications, how many were approved? Do you know, is OED the approving agency, or do you just pass them on to IRS?
Mr. Chair, we are the approving agency. We have the data to make those determinations. I would say, on average, over the last number of years, the approval rates run about 50%. So I would say 21,000, 22,000 were approved in fiscal year 14 is what I would assume. Mm-hmm.
And what causes a business to not be approved?
We wouldn't have the information to substantiate that the individual, say, was a veteran, or maybe the individual was not a participant in a SNAP program or TANF. But right now, the agency has all the SNAP and TANF data, so we're able to process those pretty efficiently.
Just to follow up, do you have any idea how many of them are ex-offenders, you know, felons?
Mr. Chair, committee members, when we pulled the data earlier today, we received in fiscal year 14 roughly 1,500 applications that were classified as ex-felon. 1,080 were approved. Now, there's a caveat to that. They may or may not have been approved for the ex-felon classification. It could have been for food stamps or another category, but 1,080 did get approved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The number of people applying for the Fidelity bond is very low, as you've said. Do you think that's due to a lack of awareness, or do you have any idea why that might be? People aren't just grabbing that. It seems like such a useful, attractive program.
Chair Dambro, committee members, that's a concern we have as well. Do I think it could be marketed better? Absolutely. But I talked to our coordinator just before coming over, and he gets a lot of calls all week long. It's probably half a dozen or more. We'll hear from job developers across the state that are really excited about the program. They're going to utilize it. And the number's 6 for the year. So it's tough to say exactly where the disconnect is between those that are sort of promoting it and where the employer buy-in is. I know I did a presentation not long ago at the Salem Chamber, and Dick Withnell was there. And he was interested in that particular bonding program, as well as one of the other members that was there. Whether or not they went anywhere with it at this point, I couldn't tell you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's probably something we should keep our eye on, mm-hmm. see if there's a way to get the word out. You know, perhaps, you know, those companies that are seeking the tax credit could be sort of automatically notified that there's this other program. And you know, I think we in the legislature are interested in looking at perhaps creating some state-based programs as well. So, you know, just adding these different tools, mm-hmm. I think, could be really useful. Yeah.
I agree.
Mr. Thatcher, you have questions?
No. Great. Okay. Thank you. I was kind of interesting to learn about it, but I didn't know
before, so. Okay, well, thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Here.
Thank you.
That's it? Yes. Okay, so this ends our information hearing on pre-apprenticeship. It's been very informative, and I thank those of you who've come. So I will close that informational hearing, and Wednesday, aside from finishing up final bills, we will have a presentation on prevailing wage. So look forward to that. And with that, for the day, we are adjourned.